establishing healthy communication in marriage and resolving conflicts. What experience I've had in the last few years is that the biggest single problem in today's marriages, Christian and non-Christian alike, is that couples do not know how to communicate effectively or how to resolve the conflicts in their relationship. And I believe that the mastery of the first, in other words, learning to communicate effectively, is the secret of the second. When you have learned to communicate, you have learned the secret of resolving conflicts. But failure to assume the responsibility to resolve conflicts in your marriage adversely affects your communication process. So if I haven't confused you with that, I intended to show the relationship between communication and resolving conflict. Communication is the secret, the foundation for being able to resolve conflicts. But once the conflicts come, if I do not take the responsibility for those, and I just live with that conflict, the communication begins to disintegrate, what there is of it. I was reading a book entitled My Life in Court, and this fella, Louis Neiser, made the comment that you can go into a restaurant and you can distinguish the married couples from the unmarried couples in the restaurant. He said, you'll notice that oftentimes the unmarried are sitting there hardly even touching their food. Their eyes are fixed in a gaze upon each other. She hangs on every word that he says. He listens very intently when she speaks. They hardly finish their food because there's just a constant communication. He says, you can see that on one side of the room, and you look over in the other side of the room, and here's a couple that have been married a few or many years. And you see him looking off in one direction, eating his food. She's looking off in the other direction. And ever so often, you'll see one without eye contact. Their lips will move a little bit, and the other one will go, And his comment was that communication is established in one case, in the other case, it is disintegrated. It has disintegrated. I was counseling a young fellow one day a few months ago, had been married between 2 and 3 years, and he came to me with another problem, but as we were digging into it, we discovered that it had some pretty deep roots, and so I began to look into his relationship to his wife. And I discovered that even after between two and three years of marriage, he could not tell me how his wife felt about sex. He could not even tell me, as I tried to help him in the broader scope of his relationship, that he didn't even know the names of the parts of the body of his mate. He did not know for sure whether she had a real enjoyment of sex in marriage. He did not know what his wife's parents' attitudes had been toward sex. He did not know the types of food and things that his wife really liked, and he did not know the state of her devotional life. So after our talk, the thing that I tried to bring to his attention is that you have not been communicating because you don't know your wife very well. You see, the word in the Old Testament Hebrew for intercourse in marriage is a very intimate word that often is translated in English as no. But it's the ultimate of knowledge. And in order to have a harmonious relationship, there must be all different stages of knowledge of our mate. And so to communicate effectively is the goal in marriage. It's not a sexual experience. It is a state of being able to communicate on a meaningful level. Now, let's just look at some principles of communication that Paul gave to the church, but if they are true of Christians, they of by all means ought to be true of a husband and wife. Notice in Philippians, the first chapter, the 27th verse. He says, only conduct yourself in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or remain absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. You see, well, there's two factors here. There is a oneness of spirit and a oneness of mind. The spirit has to do with a oneness of attitude. There is an understanding, an agreement. Amos said in Amos 3:3, can two walk together except they be agreed? It's impossible for two people to really walk harmoniously if they do not have an agreement. There's chaos in a business if there's two partners and they don't communicate about the details of the business so that there's an understanding of our business philosophy, what we're going to do with the money, how much of it we're going to apply back into the business, how much we're going to take out for salary. There has to be an understanding. That takes communication. Well, Paul says in the Christian life that Christians are to be of one spirit and one mind. And how much more it should be in marriage. Now you take the illustration of Christ in the church, of which Paul compares the husband and wife. And the whole relationship with Jesus Christ is built on the basis of communication. You have no relationship with Jesus Christ if we do not have His words to us, His love letter. He speaks to me. I speak back to Him. And the more we talk, the more I know His mind, and I can, in a reverent way, I can second guess Him. See, my wife and I have been married 13 years, and we're still getting to know each other, but there's a number of things in which Jerry can second-guess me. She can almost predict with 99% accuracy in many cases what I will say or my attitude towards something because of the fact that she knows how I feel about certain things. Well, our whole relationship with God is on that basis. And so, therefore, in our marriages, the most important thing to focus on is our communication. A fellow by the name of Rule Howe, in his book, Herein Is Love, made this statement. If there is any indispensable insight with which a young married couple should begin their life together, it is that they should try to keep open at all costs the lines of communication between them. Those lines open, because then you begin to get to know each other and have the relationship that God intends. Now, what is communication? Let me give you a definition of communication in marriage. It is that verbal and nonverbal process by which two individuals each feel he has been heard, taken seriously, and understood, and that he knows how and why the other feels the way he or she does about a given matter. See, that is communication. In other words, here are some questions that I just pondered to be a little test of whether or not my mate and I have good communication. Does your mate know, take seriously and understand how you feel about the home? About the division of labor within the home? How about the children, the discipline of the children? Does your mate know the struggles that the children are going through that you know about? Does your mate know because you've communicated those? Does your mate know, understand, take seriously and understand your feeling about finances? The in-laws? How about the navigators? How you feel about the navigators? about your church? Does your mate know how you really feel about God? Does your mate know exactly how you feel about sex? About what you enjoy doing in your leisure time? Does your mate know how you feel about the Christian ministry? About your schedule? Does your mate know about your devotional life? And then you could just turn those questions around and ask, do I know how my mate feels about those things? Well, it's the communication process that lets you in on that. Now, you see, the key word that I've used here in this is this word, feel. Because, you see, there are five levels of communication. All five of these are legitimate. But they, just like any tool, they will only accomplish what that tool is meant to do. I went to put a latch on my wife's cabinet door the other day that she had asked me several months ago to do, and just dawned on me last week that I had been dilatory on that, and I thought, if I want to show her in a practical way that I love her, I ought to just get down there and get that latch and get it put on. So I went and did it. I chose a screwdriver to put that screw in, but it was a very tough, hard wood, and that little screwdriver just wouldn't do the job. So I finally went and got the heavy-duty one, and that wouldn't do the job. So then I got my electric drill, and I drilled into that thing, and then the screw went in. Well, the drill was the particular tool to accomplish what I needed to accomplish. So what these are tools. They are levels for different levels of communication. But the first one we call the cliche level. That's where I say to you, hello, Vivian, how are you today? Fine, nice weather, yes. Very surfacey. I remember one time asking a fellow, well, how are you? And he said, sick in bed, how are you? But you see, I hadn't expected that deep a level of communication. Because usually when someone says, how are you, you don't feel like, well, I ought to dump all my problems on the person. They really didn't ask for that. They're just trying to be, nice and friendly. But they're not asking me about my operation 3 months ago and how I felt this morning when I woke up. It's a cliche level. And there's nothing wrong with that, provided that that's not the only level of our communication with people. Now, a second level is what we call third person. That's where you and I sit down and we talk about the golf tournament down in Augusta, and how Jack Nicklaus sunk a 40 to 45-foot putt on the 16th hole, and that's what won the tournament for him. It's totally outside ourselves. It's about something out there. And it's non-threatening because it's just a matter of passing information. But it's a little deeper level of communication than the first. Now, a third level is what we call ideas and opinions. Now we're getting to something that's personal. I'm telling you what I think about certain things. But right here is the great divide in many relationships. Because at that point, I've got my antennas out. And I want to know whether you will accept me for my ideas and opinions. Because if I sense that you don't like the way I think about something, I will not take you down to level number 4, where I express my feelings and my emotions. And you see, this is what happens in marriage. Many marriages that have insufficient communication is because most of their communication is on this level right here. There has been a breakdown of confidence, and so we just share factual information. Or even at the most, what we think about something. Because it's like in the little book, Powell's book, Why I'm Afraid to Tell You Who I Am, he says, why am I afraid to tell you who I am? Because if I tell you who I am and you don't like who I am, that's all I've got. So this is a very threatening level right here. But then there is a fifth level. It's which we call total, complete, personal, and intimate communication. And that right there, I am convinced, is what every person really longs to have in their relationship. It means that on any and every subject, you can share how you feel. My wife gave me this little poem one day that she had found in a magazine. Oh, the comfort, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with a person, having neither to weigh thoughts nor measure words, but pouring them all right out, just as they are, chaff and grain together, certain that a faithful hand will take and sift them, keep what is worth keeping, and with the breath of kindness blow the rest away. And friend, if in your lifetime you have one person with whom you can fellowship on a level 5, you are indeed fortunate. Because most people do not have one. But I personally think that this is the level God meant for a husband and wife to have. To feel safe with each other. But it takes a lot of work. And it takes a lot poured into that relationship to have that. Because God, when He created male and female, He said, "And they shall be one flesh." And I believe that God's resources are all poured in to help us have that kind of relationship with our mates. Now, what are the hindrances to communication? Why is it that we can't get down to a level 4 and level 5 relationship with our mate? Hindrances to communication. One of the first that I think is a selfishness. And by the way, men are the greatest offenders in this. One marriage counselor said that, in his opinion, that in the breakdown of marital communications, that 40 to 50% of all the problems have to do with the silent husband. The non-communicative husband. Now, I think the reason for this, as I've observed it, is that men tend to find their fulfillment in their work, and women tend to find their fulfillment in their husband. Well, you can see already what the problem is. That if a husband comes home and he's frustrated in his job, and he is all wrapped up in himself in that job, well, the wife has been home all day, or she now wants a meaningful, intimate relationship and communication with the husband. And when she doesn't get it, she resorts to a childish or to an unspiritual way of trying to get that, and so she will scratch or nag or criticize. Well, that makes him feel like even more of a failure. So therefore, the tendency is just to clam up, which makes her problem worse, which makes his problem worse. But it all started as a result of selfishness, of my unwillingness to try to look at my mate's needs, which is what we're going to talk about next hour. I was counseling with one couple that had a breakdown in communication, and I said to her, "Well, why did you marry him in the first place?" And she said, "Well, man, he used to do a lot of things in our engagement that he doesn't do anymore." I said, "Well, tell me about it. What was one?" And she said, well, he used to just send me a little bouquet of flowers with a little note in it that said, not for any special reason, just because I love you. So I said, how long have you been married? And she said, oh, 5.5 years. I said, well, has he sent you any flowers in the last year or two? She said, no. I said, well, tell me, what else? And she said, well, he used to just call me up once or twice a day from his job and just had a coffee break and just wouldn't talk. I says, well, has he called you during coffee break in the last 2 or 3 years? No. I said, well, what else? She said, well, when he was in college, there the year about a year before we were married, why, when he'd have a class canceled, he'd make a beeline over for my dormitory, and if I was free, why, we'd go have a Coke together. I said, well, how long has it been since he called up and said, hey, honey, I've got a free noon hour, an afternoon free, and how would you like to go for a drive? She said, boy, he hasn't in our years of marriage. So we were able to point out just what George Mueller said when he said, you see, the secret of winning love is also the secret of keeping love. And when we were trying to win our mate, we were totally unselfish. And we were thinking of them. But now that I've won her and she's over in her place to help me, she's my helpmeet, my God-given helpmeet. Now just get doing your job. And so I get all wrapped up in my thing and I don't meet her needs. So a lot of communication breakdown is just a simple matter of selfishness, which we'll talk a little bit more about the next hour. But then a second reason is resentment. Oftentimes, she has done something that makes me feel small, or I've done something that makes her feel like a failure. And there is a resentment there that I am just unwilling to open and expose myself to my mate. Another is fear. See, here, oftentimes a wife or a husband will say, well, I'd like to say how I feel, but I know the very moment that I open my mouth, he'll give me a sermon. Or he'll tell me, well, you shouldn't feel that way. See, that's what is meant in that little phrase that we gave, to be heard, to be taken seriously, and to be understood. And this is especially true of women. You see, most of the time in marriages where there is unfaithfulness, there is adultery involved. You find that the husband put his wife on an emotional island by never listening to her. Or when she did say something, he said, oh, you women, you all think alike. Why do you think that way? Why can't you be more logical? There is not a taking seriously. There is not an attempt to understand. And God has created a woman to need understanding, to need to be listened to. And if husbands don't do this, there can be some very serious problems develop in a marriage. And a wife just may say, well, you know, I'd like to say how I feel, but boy, the minute I get it out, he'll give me 9 reasons why that's illogical, and I'm just afraid of being hurt. I'm afraid of being rejected. So that is one of the hindrances to communication. A fourth is just a matter of ignorance. Now you say, what do you mean by that? Well, I think that particularly men, but it can be women also, we tend to duplicate in our homes the type of communication our parents had. A man tells me, well, in my home, we never said we loved each other. We showed our love by just doing what we were expected to do. I never saw my mother or father hug or kiss. We just each knew what we were to do, and we knew that everybody was loved. So then the wife over here, she comes from a home where, boy, the hugging and kissing is going on, and there needs to be a lot of bodily affection for reassurance. So now you get these two specimens coming from two different backgrounds, and they tend to expect their mates to respond the way that particular image did in their home. And they're just ignorant of the fact that there are other ways of communicating. That maybe the member who is used to a lot of physical and emotional expression needs to realize that the selfless thing to do would be to back down perhaps a bit and let the other member be more creative in the way they express themselves. And maybe the one who is not used to showing the affection needs to be more demonstrative. But oftentimes it's just that we just do what we saw done in our homes. We set up shop in our marriage the way it was done at home. Then a fifth reason, I think, of a breakdown in communication is because of pride. There can be no communication if I'm not willing to say the six hardest words in the English language. I was wrong. Please forgive me. And that is the place that it's got to start. Now, I want to go into, for just a moment, this matter of how to communicate effectively. How do you do it if you realize you need to? But let's stop right here just a moment and ask if there be any questions on what we've covered so far. Well, there's been the husband will often put his wife on an emotional island. In other words, not listening, taking seriously, or trying to understand. See, I don't understand everything that my wife says, but I better communicate to her that I'm trying to. Well, unfaithfulness and adultery, yeah. Well, I'm just saying that oftentimes in the case of unfaithfulness in marriage or adultery, yeah, I was synonymous, the unfaithfulness or adultery, you'll look back and find out that communication totally broke down. And the other member finally found someone who would listen to them. That's why Howard Hendricks says, to husbands and wives, you better create a magnet at home. Because he says, I'm telling you, out in the world, the devil will set magnets up. And communication is that magnet that really draws the husband and wife together, to where I believe that if a husband and wife, if we'll really work at good communication in our marriage, we'll be almost invulnerable to the attacks from the enemy from the outside. Communication is the secret. You know, I've found that over the years I've had a few real close friendships. And inevitably, the more you learn about a person, the real person, the more there's a deep appreciation and admiration. And Jonathan and David had this. It says that their love for each other exceeded the love of women. And Jonathan and David had this. It says that their love for each other exceeded the love of women. That his love for women. There was a camaraderie between Jonathan and David. Well, I believe that God intended for a husband and wife to have that. To really be friends. We just don't realize that there are some principles of communication. See, occasionally, and this is a rare thing, occasionally there is a home that can communicate non-verbally without communicating verbally. But that is rare. Maybe somehow in the old days the father and mother kind of were alike in some ways as they were growing up in their marriage in their early years, and they just learned to communicate non-verbally. But even in most non-verbal relationships, you will discover that there's a real emotional vacuum. And usually the wife's the one who feels it. I don't think we should pry into... I think communication needs to be a voluntary thing. And there are certain things that I think any mate would probably thoughts, our thought life. Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians 10 about the fact that we need to bring it into captivity, bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. And so there could conceivably be things that just need never be said. I oftentimes have caught myself over the years with some kind of a negative reaction to something my wife said or did. But before I expressed that to her, I went to God, perhaps, and said, "Well, now, Lord, why does that bother me so much?" And came to realize that it wasn't so much her problem as it was mine. So, in confessing and dealing with that, then it can just be buried and need not be brought up. But I would say that on as many levels as possible that we can communicate our feelings, I think the deeper we have a relationship. All right? Let me just suggest, okay, yeah. All right. I tell you, I'm going to cover that on that principle. So why don't we just hold that just a minute? Because the answer is yes, that you're not only responsible for speaking the truth, but you've got to speak it in love. And love considers things from the other's point of view. I've discovered with my wife that it's not so much what's said, but how it's said as to whether it's easy to receive it. If I just in some way communicate impatience to my wife, or I snap at her in some way, or ask a lot of why type questions, by the way, why questions always put pressure on people. You ever notice that? If I say to you, hey, where'd you get that coat? Oh, you think you like it, you want to go buy one, I bought it down at such and such. Or I say, what's that coat made of? That's a very non-threatening question. But if I say, why'd you buy that coat? Did you notice the difference? There's a pressure there, you see. And so I've just found that with my wife or her with me, that if it's in a non-threatening way, boy, there's hardly anything that Jerry won't receive. But boy, sometimes it's awfully hard to swallow the way it comes across. And the commandment is that I have to speak the truth in love. All right, let me just give a few suggestions of some things that we've learned that I think has helped us and that we're still working on. But I believe the first secret of learning to communicate well with your mate is that you've learned to communicate well with God. You see, there's a principle that says that the closer two objects are to the same object, of necessity they are close to each other. You see, as I'm growing in my relationship to God, as Jerry's growing in her relationship to God, the closer we are. And if I can sit and listen to God when He speaks, and I'm willing to totally expose my heart to God in prayer, I'm willing to confess my sins, call them what they are, and I've come to the place to where I enjoy spending a protracted time with God in prayer and meditation, I can almost guarantee that if we didn't go any further, you would learn to communicate with your mate. Because just the blessing of God, it says in Proverbs 10:22, the blessing of God, it makes rich. And God will just enrich our lives. This is just a little parenthesis, but for years, I took that commandment in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and I wondered why Paul later on said, don't let any man judge you with regard to the Sabbath. Some people count all day alike, some people count one day above another. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. And so I thought, well, that particular commandment, Paul says we can either keep it or toss it out. It's up to you. You can live by faith. Whatever you decide is right, it's okay for you. I have discovered that that is wrong interpretation of Paul's words in Colossians and Romans 14 and Colossians 2. You see, what he was talking about in Romans 14 and Colossians 2 were the traditions, the Jewish traditions that had grown up around the Sabbath. And how you kept it. But the truth of the matter was that the Sabbath was given for two main reasons. One was that God knew the way he had made man that if one day in seven he would take a complete diversion from his work, that he'd live longer, his emotional, spiritual, and physical resources would be rejuvenated, and he'd have a happy life. But I think also that God, in the beginning, felt that if in one day out of seven, a man or a woman would spend an unusually longer period of time just meditating and praying, that their whole week to follow would go better and smoother with the blessing of God. And so I do not believe personally that in the Christian age in which we live, that God has negated and nullified the value of once in a, not legalistically, but on a regular basis, a person spending a protracted period of time meditating and praying upon God. The problem is we're too busy. I just read this last week in a magazine in Colorado Springs that now the national average of the number of hours that the television set is on in the average American home is 43 and a half hours a week. That's 6 1/4 hours a day. But even if a person took a third of that time and spent that in Bible meditation and prayer, they'd be a minor prophet. At least minor. But I believe that the first secret to really being able to communicate with your mate is to learn to communicate with God and to enjoy it. But you see, it may be that many of us have just learned to maybe have our little 7 minutes with God and never grown anymore, and 7 minutes with your wife is not enough. And yet I know some wives who said, well, if you'd just give me 7 minutes of undivided attention, I'd appreciate that. But real communication will not be built on little time, just a 7 minute period of time. So step number one is learn to communicate with God. And then I think that if a husband and wife would set a time daily for worship together, and here it need not be long, but I think that there's a tremendous blessing that comes to a husband and wife that at the breakfast table to just have a few moments to read a short portion of Scripture, a verse or two even, to let each make a comment on what that means to their life, and then to reach over and take your mate's hand, and while you're holding hands there, to ask God's blessing on your life for that day. I can't help but feel that God would really anoint that marriage with a meaningful communication in the rest of the time. Another step in communication is to be sensitive to the Spirit of God, which means two things. One is to confess when I am wrong. See, I mentioned a few minutes ago that one of the hindrances to communication is pride. And if I'm not willing to say to Jerry, honey, I've really blown it, please forgive me, then I'm not sensitive to the Spirit of God and I've blocked our communication. Or if she comes to me and says, Jim, and she calls a weakness to my attention in my own life. If I react to that and don't receive it like Chuck was talking about last night, there can be no communication when I'm unteachable. So I think to have a heart that humbles itself before God and the Spirit of God is one of the secrets. Another suggestion for a good communication in the home is to be a good reader and observer. D.E. Host even made the comment, he said, unless any believing child of God safely maintains the habit of spending a long time every day in prayer and meditation, study and meditation upon the Holy Scriptures and upon the books of godly teachers thereon, instead of going on from strength to strength and experiencing increasing gift and power, to undergo a subtle but deeply real process of deterioration. And some of us, God has given us a mind, but we're not being a good steward of it. You see, truth and knowledge is all part of God's dispensation to us. And to be the type of person that's hungering to learn, I think helps to make you a good communicator. You read something in a magazine that's a good illustration of a truth of Scripture, either a positive or negative. And when your hubby comes home, you say, hey, guess what I read today? And it'd be even better if he said to you, hey, what'd you read today? And vice versa. But to be a good reader and observer, you remember in Proverbs 24 that the man went by the field of the slothful, the vineyard of the man void of understanding, and he said, I looked, and behold, the ground was covered with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall there was broken down. And he said, then I saw and considered it well. I received instruction. I looked upon it and received instruction. Boy, I tell you, it really thrills me. It enriches me when I come home at night, and my wife says, hey, guess what I saw today? I say, what? And then she tells me something that the kids did, or something that happened to her, or something that was said to her, and she had drawn a principle from it from her own life. And boy, you know, a lot of the illustrations I use in my counseling and my messages come from things my wife shares with me. So I think we need to be not only good readers, but observers. And then I think we need to master the art of asking questions. I tell you, communication. If you really want to communicate with somebody, just ask them a question about something they get excited about, and off they go. Howard Hendricks tells about getting on a plane one day and sitting by a man and finding out what his field was through a question or two. And then Howie asked him a very penetrating question, and the guy for the next 2 hours just talked incessantly. And Howie just occasionally would interject a question to take him on further. And when they got to the end of the trip, the man said to him, boy, I've really enjoyed this conversation today. And a few days later, he got an autographed book from the man that he had written on the subject they were talking about. Well, you see, boy, there was communication going on. It wasn't two-way, but Howie was secure enough that he didn't need the other way right then. But if we could master the art of drawing out the other person. See, if I come home and I saw a cartoon the other day. First picture showed a man sitting with a newspaper in front of him, and all you saw in the cartoon was the back of the newspaper, and the wife was sitting there disgruntled. Second picture, she pulls the newspaper down. Here he is, hair not combed, unshaven, face unwashed, and she's got this look on her face. The last picture shows her pushing the paper back up. Well, you know, they say that in marriage that, well, you never read a newspaper at the table. That's the time for communication. Well, if we just knew how to ask questions, to draw our mates out on what they've learned, what they've read, what they've seen, what they're thinking about, how they feel, then we have communication. And then I think a last suggestion, that I feel personally that right now, after the years that Jerry and I have been married, that our communication is becoming more and more spontaneous. That we have developed a friendship. We still have our disagreements, our conflicts. We've got problems. We're still growing. But I'm encouraged that at this point, quite often, we find ourselves up in the bedroom or the kitchen or in the car, just latching on a subject and going at it. But I tell you, in the early years of our marriage, it wasn't that way. And I found that I had to make a high priority out of making time to do that so that she could learn to feel safe in my presence. And maybe I'm working with a couple right now that have been married 3 years and their communication is almost nil. It's disintegrated, what there was of it. So the assignment I've given them is that one night a week, and they pick the night, but on that night, she gets the baby bathed and in his PJs early. Then he comes home and plays with the kid and puts the kid down while she's finishing a beautiful candlelight dinner. And then the two of them go and take the phone off the hook, and they sit down to this candlelight dinner together, and then afterwards they spend 2 hours in their living room reading a book together, talking about anything they want to talk about, but just communicating. Well, if it doesn't come natural, you see, when my little boy was first starting, my children were first starting to walk, you know, they had to, it was very mechanical. I think, you know, you reach out there and you put that foot down. But then now, Rodney runs, you know, plays halfback on the little league football team, and he never thinks about running. But in learning any kind of skill, sometimes it has to seem awfully mechanical in the beginning. You have to plan how you're going to do it. And one of our problems in America is if we're not watching the TV, we're out in the ministry, and there just isn't any time to communicate. So to set aside that time to communicate. Any questions on those suggestions? Or insights from you and on enlightening us further on one of these points? All right. I suggested that to communicate, to learn to communicate well with God is the first, I believe, the first step of learning to communicate with your mate. Now, let me just say, there are some non-Christian couples that have good communication. For every one who does, you'd probably find 500 who don't. And so they just happen to have been graced with some commonality that has allowed them to. But I believe that if Christian couples don't have good communication, I think that's the place to start. Communicating well with God. Secondly, setting a little space of time each day, just a few minutes, to worship together, where you read a portion of Scripture, make a few brief comments on it, and just have a word of prayer together, asking God's blessing on the day. And then thirdly, to be quick to confess your shortcomings or to accept correction from your mate on your shortcomings. And fourthly, to be a reader and observer. Six, master the art of asking questions. And six, set prime time with your mate to communicate. In other words, put a high priority on it. I had a little note written over my desk for a number of years. It just read, 10 years from now, what will I wish I had done today? Well, you know, that really puts things in perspective. 10 years from now, my oldest boy is going to be graduating from college, perhaps, if Jesus hasn't come. I only have him 5 more years. Boy, what I'm going to put in that kid's life before he goes out to face the world, I've got 5 years to do it. But, you know, if I don't think about that, if I just think about today, it'd be awfully easy to spend extra hours out at the office rather than home throwing the baseball with him. Well, I could think, well, my wife knows how to handle things at home, and so, you know, man, I got that pressure at the office, and so just night after night, week after week, I neglect her communication needs, and I can wake up 5 years from now with a crippled marriage. So just that little, put high priority on communication time, because boy, 10 years from now, it'll have been worth a lot more than some of the piddly things we give ourselves to. Charlie Hummel says it's the squeaky hinge that gets the oil. And the things that are eternally important, I have found, do not often scream for attention. And so God leaves it to us to wait to respond to the promptings of His Spirit to give attention to communication. I was sitting at the table the other night with pressure. I felt I needed to work on to redo and work on these messages for this weekend. And I'd planned to do that in the evening, but my daughter came up and she said, "Hey, Dad, how about throwing the baseball with me out in the backyard?" Well, just right then, I had that battle of, what do I do? But I thought, man, you know, she may not ask me next year. A couple of years from now, some boy is going to be awfully attractive to her. Boy, I need an input with that girl right now. So I went out and threw the baseball for 20 minutes with her. And still got my messages prepared, so. But communication time with our wives and our family members, very important. Yes, there's a book entitled Caring Enough to Confront by David Augsburger. He was the preacher on the Mennonite Hour, I think, radio broadcast, and it's an excellent book on learning to be honest and communicate with your mate. A thought here on resolving conflicts. Let's say that you and your mate have a conflict. There's something that you disagree on or you don't see eye to eye. There's a disagreement. Well, there's five different ways you can deal with that. Or at least five. One attitude you can have is, boy, I'll get him. Or I'll get her. It's the I win, you lose approach. Well, you probably have already guessed that that's a very immature or unspiritual way, attitude to have, especially in light of the Savior who said, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and so forth. So to have that attitude of vengeance is less than Christian. But it's the attitude that often you have, especially in a marriage where one dominates the other, and, well, I'm going to put him down or I'm going to put her down. But that's one way of approaching a conflict. Another says, I'll get out. Or in other words, I want out, I'll withdraw. Now, I believe that there are times when that approach is legitimate for a short period of time, not ultimately. But there are times when Jerry and I have discovered that one or both of us may be so emotional at the moment that the best thing to do is just back off and not say anything. Just talking with a NAV couple the other day where the wife said, boy, said, that's my husband's favorite tactic. We get into a disagreement, and he just said, well, sweetheart, I don't have any more to say, and just walk out the door. Well, that may be all right for letting the fire die down, but that ultimately will not solve the problem. That can just greatly frustrate the other member. Another approach is, I'll give in. I need your friendship so badly that whatever you say, if you insist on it, I'll give in. The only problem with that is that you do not cover up how you really feel, and I don't think your mate respects you for doing that. But I think there are times when, for a short period of time, that's legitimate. It's very Christian sometimes. Just to say, okay, whatever you want. Abraham had that attitude with Lot. If you want the right, I'll go to the left. If you want the left, I'll go to the right. But it's an attitude of meekness, of humility, of, okay, I'll give in. But if that's the pattern of dealing with conflicts, it's unhealthy. Because what happens is it doesn't express how you really feel inside. And it's just like a seething volcano or an erupting sore that someday will pop out with tremendous resentment because you put the lid on it. Another way of approaching conflict is to say, I'll meet you halfway. You do this, this, and this, and I'll do that, that, and that. Well, I think that approach is okay for understanding each other's needs and each other's desires, and to be able to listen to the complaint that each has. But the problem is, and I've found marriage counselors that sit down with a couple, and they find out that she says, I want this, 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 and this. And he says, well, I want this, 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 and this. And so we make a contract. I even found one marriage counselor who wrote up a contract where he agreed he would give her this, 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 and this, and do that. And she agreed, and they signed it. You know what the problem with that is? Is that they're both human sinners. And just the moment that he fails on this one, then that gives her the right to fail on that one, and then you have this kind of a situation developing. And it seems to me that in Jesus Christ, I've got to be willing to say, whether she ever changes or not, I'll go all the way. And then if we both do it at the same time, or if that provokes her to do that, then we both are willing to go 100%, and there's a lot of room in there for human failure without the relationship breaking down. And as far as I can tell from Scripture, that's the only Christian way to look at it. But one approach to conflict is, well, we'll go halfway. But a fifth is, I love you and I care enough to confront you. And Ephesians 4 is the key to this. When it says in verse 15, but speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Christ. Speaking the truth, but speaking it in love. And you see, Jesus talked about this when he said that if I see a splinter in my brother's eye, I am absolutely disqualified from helping him get it out until I've gone and got the beam out of my own eye. And when I go and ask God, Lord, I know that what Jerry did just now has really upset me, and I think it's wrong. But Lord, why does it bother me so much? Am I grieved over your righteousness being offended? Am I grieved over the fact that she's missing on some growth in her maturity? Or am I grieving because it's made me feel like a failure as a man? It's been a criticism of me. You see, and oftentimes when we're emotionally upset, it's because in some way it's reflected back on me.